Thank you, man. Appreciate that. Well, Dr. Ray Young is the president of Hiles Anderson College, and he is always a blessing. I've enjoyed hearing him preach many, many times. I've enjoyed his messages, very practical, very down to earth. And when he said he wanted to come and talk to parents and talk to our young people and all that, first thing I thought of, well, I'll ask him to preach. And I'm so glad, and so glad that he's doing this. I'm glad he's coming to talk to folks. And more important than him being a good preacher, he's a good friend, and I appreciate his friendship. So listen to him. Let God speak to your heart. Brother Young.
Amen. All right. Thank you very much. If you'd take your Bible, please, and open to the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 1. And I'll just say very, very briefly while you're opening your Bibles that we do have a table out in the lobby. We have some free items out there. You can feel free to take one of each of those that you'd like to have, some brochures and some gifts from our college. The main thing I wanted to say to you, I'll just mention briefly now and then explain more about it later if you're interested, is we have a brand new department of our college called our Online Studies. And this has four areas in the online studies. First of all, we have what we call the Advantage Program. That's for teenagers 13 through 19. And you can sign up and take college courses for credit. And when you decide to go to college someday, then those credits would apply towards your major at Hiles Anderson College or any other Christian college that you attend. We will transfer those colleges to that, transfer those credits to that college for you. And when you sign up online and take them as a teenager, you get a head start on going to college, and you also get the credits at a 25% discount. Then we have a diploma completion program. If you ever attended a Christian college and for whatever reason you did not finish your degree, you can go online and take your classes one at a time until you finish your degree, and then you can come to Hiles Anderson College and get a diploma from our college at the graduation ceremony. Or if you're interested in taking a four-year degree and getting a diploma, a college diploma, and you've never taken any college classes before, you can do the same thing. You can sign up, take your classes online, and actually get a diploma from Hiles Anderson College and come and participate in our graduation ceremony if you choose to do so. Excuse me. And then we also have what we call our master's program. If you've already completed a four-year degree from any college, then you can sign up online, stay home, take your classes at home at your pace, and take a master's degree course. Now, don't get the wrong impression. You do not have to commit to any of these programs to just sign up and take one class. And we'll give you more details about that later on. If you just want to learn more about the Bible or learn a little bit more about leadership or working in a church or anything of that nature, you can take any of our college classes, even if you just take one. And then the only other thing that I was going to mention tonight that I'll talk about more after the service if you're interested is our regular college, the resident program. If you come and live in our dorms, or if you're a married person and you come and live in our area and attend college, we have now what we call our Jericho plan. And basically you go to college the first 2 years, your freshman year and sophomore year, free of charge. You pay a registration fee of $1,500 one time in your sophomore or your freshman year, one time in your sophomore year, and the rest of the college, the other about $7,000, is free of charge your freshman year and your sophomore year. Then by the time you get into your junior year, we will help you find a job in our area. Of course, if you're a married man, we'll help you find a job right away as soon as you come. But if you're a dorm student, we'll help you find a job in our area if you need one. And by your junior year, then you can begin paying your school bill, but you will not reimburse us for the cost of your freshman and sophomore year. You will actually graduate from college and never have paid for your freshman or sophomore year. Those 2 years are free of charge once you complete your degree, your four-year degree. And I know all of that might be a little confusing to you. I'm trying my best not to go into a lot of details right now, because I realize there's some here tonight that's not interested. But for those that are interested in any portion of that or anything else about our college, and like the pastor said, if you want to just ask any questions about your students being there, your children, or the possibility of you going there, or the possibility of you taking a class or two or more online someday, I'll be glad to talk to you after the service and try to help you with anything that I can. I appreciate Brother Rogers allowing me to be here tonight. I've known of this church for quite some time because we've had many students from this church at our college through the years. And then, of course, the church became more to me, it grew to the point where it meant much more to me in the last few years because my first son-in-law is from this church. And so I'm very grateful for this church and for all of you that had an investment in his life. I couldn't ask for a better son-in-law. There's just no way in the world anybody could ever be a better son-in-law than Andy Bailey is in my family, and we're very, very privileged to have him as a member of our family, and I appreciate all of you who had some part in his life, his growing up here. Are you in Deuteronomy chapter 1? Did you find that? All right, we're going to read from there in just a moment. Let me sort of set the stage for you. Moses is leading the children of Israel from Egypt to the Promised Land. They have already been on their journey that turned out to be a 40-year journey. They've already been on their journey now for over 39 years when we pick up the story in Deuteronomy chapter 1. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, what's happening here is Moses gets the entire nation of Israel back together one last time just before he dies and just before they're going to cross over the Jordan River and go into the Promised Land. And Moses is rehearsing with them or reminding them or recapping with them some of the things that has already happened on their journey and some of the things that they've learned. He's not teaching them anything new here. He's reviewing some old ground with them and reminding them of some things just before he passes off the scene and just before they go into the Promised Land. So that's where we pick up the story in Deuteronomy chapter 1. We'll begin reading in verse 9. Moses is speaking here. He's speaking to the nation of Israel. And I spake unto you at that time. All right, let me ask you to look at me for a moment. When he says, I spake unto you at that time, right now, at the end of the journey, he's reminding them of something he said to them about 39 years ago. They were about 3 or 4 months into their journey, and he got them together, and he said something to them at that time. Well, now, 39 years later, he's reminding them what he said 39 years ago. So he said in verse 9, and I spake unto you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone. The Lord your God hath multiplied you, and behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude. So he's reminding them now, near the end of the journey, that about 39 years ago, I told you then, you are so many people, it's as if God has multiplied you like the stars of the heaven, and there's so many of you, I can't take care of all of you by myself. All right, look in verse 12. How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance? This is what he said to them 39 years ago. How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance? Notice that word. And your burden, notice that word. And your strife, notice that word. Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I will make them rulers over you. And ye answered me 39 years ago and said, the thing which thou hast spoken is good for us to do. So I took the chief of your tribes, wise men and known, and made them heads over you, captains over thousands and captains over hundreds and captains over fifties and captains over tens and officers among your tribes. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Ye shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is of God, is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. So Moses said to them 39 years ago, there's too many of you. I can't take care of all of you by myself. I'm going to have some help. He said about 3 months into their journey, hey, this thing's wearing me out. There's 1.5 million of you folks, and you're having different issues and problems in life, and you're bringing them all to me. His father-in-law said to him about that time, Moses, you sat at the judgment seat from early in the morning until after dark at night, and one after another, everybody brings their problems to you, and you try to decide every single case. And his father-in-law said, Moses, you can't take care of all this by yourself. You're going to have some help. And by the way, every church that grows and continues to grow at some point has to come to a point in the growth of that church that it goes through a transition. A transition from the pastor and his family and a few leaders in the church helping him to almost everybody in the church stepping up and taking on their part of the load. If you're the type of person that just comes to the church and just sits in the pew and just enjoys the service and says, well, that song was a blessing and I sure enjoyed that message today, preacher, but you're not doing anything in the church, you're going to limit the growth of the church. If the church is going to grow beyond what it can grow with the pastor and a few people helping out, everybody in the church is going to have to step up and say, all right, I'm willing to take on my part of the load also. Now, what I want to do tonight is give you my definition. I'm not sure that Noah Webster would agree with this, but I'm going to give you my definition of those three words, cumbrance and burden and strife. The cumbrance are those things that slow you down in life. Those things that you have to have, but they slow you down. I'm talking about your job. I'm talking about your food, your car, your money, your clothes, your house, your health, your pots and pans, your furniture, your cat, your dog, your horse, your bicycle, your purse, your makeup, your toothbrush, your books, all of those things in life that we feel like we just have to have, but they slow us down in life. You know, the songwriter said, cumbered with a load of care. We're all trying to get through life with our cumbrance. Those things are that stuff that we have that gets us through life. And we have to have it to get through life, but dealing with it slows us down as we try to get through life. Our burden, that's those things that you're carrying through life, or the carrying of all of your cumbrance. That's your burden. You know, a house is a wonderful thing to have until the roof starts leaking. Then it becomes a burden. You know, a car is a wonderful thing to have until you rush out of the house one morning to jump in it and go to work and it's got a flat tire. You know, a furniture is a wonderful thing to have until you have to load it all on a little two-wheel cart and pull it 500 miles across a desert and get it to the promised land. Then it becomes a burden. And the burden is the carrying of your stuff, and then the strife is when your stuff bumps into my stuff. And then we have strife. So the cumbrance are those things you have to take in life. The burden is the carrying of those things, and the strife is when they bump into each other. Can you see Moses there in front of these people, 1.5 million people, and they all have their stuff. They all have their things loaded on their little cart, and they're all going to go on their journey, and they get about 3 months into the journey, and there's so many people who have strife already because his stuff bumped into his stuff, and they're all bringing their strife to Moses, and Moses is trying to referee between their strife, and he's trying to help them carry their stuff through this journey, and Moses gets to the point to where he says, I can't handle all this by myself. Now, doesn't that sound like a picture of our life? We all have our stuff. Everybody's trying to get their stuff through life. And somebody else's stuff is always bumping into your stuff. Or sometimes your stuff bumps into somebody else's stuff. And then somebody has to referee. Kind of sounds like pastoring a church, doesn't it? Yeah, just a little bit. Or running a business. Or managing a store. Or taking care of a family. In every group of people, there is cumbrance that helps you get through life, and there's burden carrying that stuff that you need to help you get through life, and then the strife that's caused by different people's stuff bumping into each other. And by the way, being in the ministry means dealing with people. And when you deal with people, you deal with their cumbrance. You deal with their burdens, and you deal with their strife. And by the way, the pastor is not the only one in the ministry. The staff is not the only one in the ministry. The choir director is not the only one in the ministry. The youth pastor is not the only one in the ministry. Every greeter that stands at the door is in the ministry. Every usher that takes up the offering is in the ministry. Every Sunday school teacher, every nursery worker, every bus worker, every junior church worker, every soul winner, everybody who goes to the jail service, everybody who conducts a nursing home service, everybody who helps with the RU ministry, everybody who works in the nursery, we're all in the ministry if we're helping in any way whatsoever. And if you're not willing to deal with people's cumbrance and burden and strife, then you're going to be limited to just working with things or working with animals. And I don't know about you, but that's not the kind of life I want. I remember a few years ago, my family and I were on vacation out in Wyoming. And we had been driving one day for about 2.5 hours down a state highway in Wyoming. It wasn't an interstate, but a state highway. And for 2.5 hours, we didn't see another human being outside our van. On this side of the road, on the left, there was nothing but sagebrush as far as you could see. On this side of the road, there was nothing but a barbed wire fence. For 2.5 hours, we didn't see one house. We didn't see one barn. We didn't see one person. No car passed us. No car met us. It was just us. And after 2.5 hours, we finally came over this little knoll. Off to the right on the other side of that fence, there was a man on a horse. And he was just riding along real slow on that horse. He had some tools tied to the saddle. He had a hammer. He had a crowbar. He had a pair of pliers. He had some wire snips. He had a bucket, I assume, full of staples. And he was riding along real slow, just looking at that fence as he rode along. And you know what he was doing? He was looking for a place in the fence that needed to be repaired. And if something was wrong, he was going to get off that horse and fix that fence. And I remember as I was approaching him in my van, and for quite some distance I could see him as we got closer and closer, and I was thinking to myself, wow, what a job. What a job. You don't have anybody to argue with, nobody to argue about how to fix the fence, which tool to use. All you got to do is figure out which horse to pick out in the morning, which saddle to put on the horse, which tools to tie on the saddle, and then just ride that fence and figure out if it's broken, if it is fixed. I remember thinking, what a job. And then about the time we got even with him, right out loud, I just said, but I love people too much. And my wife said, what? And I was thinking, yeah, great job, but I'd rather work with people. I love working with people. And that's what Moses was saying was, I love working with you people, but I need help. I've got to have help. There has to be somebody else who also loves working with the people. So who's going to help Moses oversee all this cumbrance? Who's going to help Moses oversee all this stuff that they're taking across the desert? Who's going to help Moses help all these other people carry their stuff? Who's going to help Moses with all this strife? Can you see them as they're all lined up? They've all got their cart, their little two-wheel cart. They've all got their stuff stacked on the cart. They've all got their donkey to pull the cart. And they've all got their ducks in a row behind the cart or their geese. And their children in the row, and maybe their goat tied to the back of the cart. And they all start across the desert, and one fella forgot to grease the axle on his cart. So they get a few miles out into the desert and his wheel falls off his cart. And when it does, his cart tilts and that water pot on the top of the stack up there falls off on the ground. And it breaks into 100 pieces. And a sharp edge of it is sticking up in the sand. And the next guy's donkey steps on that sharp edge. And when he steps on that sharp edge, he kicks. And when he kicks the goose of the guy next to him. And that guy's geese scatter. And they scatter among the geese of the next two guys. And now you've got 3 family worth of children all running around chasing the geese, arguing about whose goose is whose. These two guys are over here arguing about whose donkey stepped on whose water pot. And Moses has to figure out all the strife. You know, anytime you get a group of people together, you're going to have cumbrance. Everybody's got their stuff. You've got your stuff to take through life, and everybody else has got their stuff. And every time you have people, you're going to have burdens. Somebody needs help carrying their stuff through life. And every time you get a group of people together, you're going to have strife. It is a common, normal part of life. That's why we have a pastor. That's why we have a foreman. That's why we have a superintendent. That's why we have a Sunday school superintendent. That's why we have a supervisor. That's why we have a owner of the company. That's why we have a bus captain. That's why we have a bus director. That's why we have a youth pastor. That's why we have a nursery director. Somebody has to oversee this situation that involves other people. And remember, Moses said, you judge the normal cases and bring the hard cases to me. Anytime you have a group of people, you're going to have cumbrance and burden and strife, and each one of those is as common as the other one. But aren't you glad that God has a way to organize life? You know, this idea of having a pastor and an assistant pastor and a Sunday school superintendent and a bus director and a Sunday school teacher and a children's choir director and a nursery director and a choir director. You know, this idea of dividing people into groups and putting a leader over them, that wasn't man's idea. That was God's idea. It was God's idea. God came to Moses and said, Moses, I know this is too much for you to handle, and so you need to divide the people into groups and put somebody in charge of each group and let each person supervise that group, and the cases that are too hard for them to take care of, bring them to me, Moses. And aren't you glad you have a pastor that's the kind of pastor that if you were across town somewhere and you had a flat tire on your car and you've checked your spare and found out it was missing and your jack wasn't working and you needed some help, aren't you glad you had the kind of pastor? All you'd have to do is call him on the phone, and at any moment he would drop what he was doing and send his wife to help you. Aren't you glad that God put us in that type of situation in life to where when you have a problem that's more than you can handle, there's somebody you can turn to? Wouldn't it be an awful life, an awful way to go through life, where you never had the opportunity to ever go to anybody else and say, hey, I need your help? But aren't you glad that we've got a God who decided that He would organize life for us? Now, what we have to decide is where we want to fit into the picture. You might decide you want to be that person who has no stuff. Now, here in America, we usually refer to those kind of people as homeless people. But you know, they don't have a burden to get their stuff through life because they don't have any. Or you might want to decide that you want to be one of those kind of people who has some stuff, but you're not going anywhere with it. Sometimes we refer to, at least where I grew up, we referred to those kind of people as a hermit. They had their stuff, but they were off by themselves and they were not doing anything in life. I grew up in Louisiana, and there was a certain bayou that my family and I fished on my entire time I was growing up. For 18 years, we fished on this same bayou, and we would go up and down this bayou all the time during my life, and there was this one place where there were cypress trees that the water went way out into the cypress. There was like a forest that was in about 3 or 4 feet of water. And these cypress trees were growing up out of the water, and in those cypress trees up above the water, somebody had built a shack out of some old boards. They found one here and one there and one there, and they found some old rusty tin, put it on the roof, and somebody lived in that shack. Because every once in a while, when it got really cold in Louisiana, I mean on a frigid cold day, and it got down to around 45 degrees, you'd see a little bit of smoke coming out of the smokestack in that little shack. I know somebody lived in it. There was a boat under there. But you know, I went up and down that bayou many times a year for 18 years, and not one single time did I ever see the guy that lived in that shack. Nor did that shack ever get any bigger. And I don't think he changed the tin on the roof one time in 18 years. He had some stuff, but he wasn't accomplishing anything in life. He wasn't going anywhere. Or you might be that person that has some stuff and you're going somewhere with it, but every time you try to go somewhere, you bump into somebody else's stuff. Are you thinking of somebody like that right now? Every time that we need some help, he's willing to help. And as soon as he begins to help, he creates some strife because he bumps into somebody else in one way or another. Or you might want to be that person that has your stuff, and you've got your stuff all organized, and you know exactly where you're going in life, and you're headed there, and you're going to get there. But woe be to the person that bumps into your stuff. I mean, that person that bumps into your brand new shiny car, or that person that bumps into your plans that you had planned for what you were going to do in life, woe be to that person. Or you may someday mature to the point to where you become one of those that's wise enough that somebody else could appoint you to oversee a group of people, like maybe be a Sunday school teacher, or like maybe be a foreman on the job, or like maybe be a children's choir director, or maybe to be a bus captain, or maybe to be a foreman, or maybe to, I don't know what it would be. But those are the people that are wise enough to get their stuff together and figure out that I've got to take care of myself. I've got to gather my stuff in life. I can't always depend on somebody else to provide for me. I've got to provide for myself, and I've got to get my stuff through life. And every once in a while, I have to divert my attention from my stuff and help somebody else get their stuff through life. Or you may someday become the one to whom they take the hard cases. Which one do you want to be? The one who has no stuff? The one who has some stuff but just sits still with it and never accomplishes anything in life? Or the one who's always bumping into somebody else with your stuff? Or the one who gets upset because everybody else bumps into you? Or do you want to be one that's wise enough that you can be there to help others when they need help, and then maybe someday become the one to whom they take the hard cases? Each one of those six positions I just described are both normal and important. So don't let it frustrate you when somebody is doing part of what is normal in life. Don't let it frustrate you when somebody else is on this level if you've gotten to this level. Do you know if there was nobody on that level, there would be no candidates for this level? And if there was nobody on this level, there'd be no candidates for this level. And if there was nobody on this level, there would be nobody in life for you to help. And if you never helped anybody else in life, you would be one of the most miserable creatures on this earth. The happiest people on this earth are those that have found out, I can get my stuff together and head through life and every once in a while take time to reach back to somebody who's a little bit behind me and help them bring their stuff up here with me and my stuff. I think it was Colin Powell who said, when people cease to bring you their problems, you cease to be their leader. My former pastor that many of you know of, Dr. Jack Hiles, he used to say the leader is the one who hides his panic. You know, if all of a sudden tonight we began to smell a little smoke and suddenly it dawned on us, hey, the building's on fire. And somebody yelled, fire, fire. Somebody in the room would jump up out of their seat, run around and around in circles, and go nowhere. Because they would panic. Somebody else would jump up out of their seat, and they would make a beeline for the door and knock four people down on the way there. And somebody else would calmly stand up and say, why don't you hold that door open? Why don't you hold that door open? Why don't you hold that door open? Why don't you folks go this way? You folks go that way. You folks go that way. And don't stop by the door. Go across the parking lot so everybody has room to get out. And we would all suddenly think, he must be the leader. Do you know he's smelling the same smoke all the rest of us are smelling? But he hid his panic. Now, you will get frustrated less often, and you will panic less often if you'll do the seven things I'm going to give you tonight. I'm just going to read them for you quickly. We will not be here much later than you normally are on Sunday night, if any later than you normally are on Sunday night. And let me read these seven things for you. You will panic less often and get frustrated less often if you'll do these seven things. Number one, give the other person the benefit of the doubt. If you're dealing with somebody else and there seems to be a misunderstanding, or he doesn't seem to be able to get his stuff through life, and he's either causing strife or you're having to help him with his stuff, give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he didn't mean to do it. It just might be whatever the strife is right now, he didn't mean to do it. It might be that maybe he's doing the best he can with what he's got to work with. You know, it just might be he's putting his best effort forth, but he just doesn't have the wherewithal to work with life in the manner that you do. Or maybe he would do better if somebody would teach him. Or maybe he misunderstood what he was supposed to do. I know sometimes you look at somebody and you say, I cannot believe he did that. He knew better than that. Well, maybe he didn't. Or maybe you would understand why he did what he did if you knew where he came from or you knew something about his circumstances. Boy, it's amazing what you learn when you're president of a college and you have many, many students come from all around the country and even around the world. And every once in a while you get a student in your college and you look at that student and you think, now he's different. Now he doesn't do it like anybody else does it. And why is he so different? Why is he do it totally different than everybody else? And then maybe a couple of years later, his parents come to visit the college. All questions answered. No, not your children, from some other church. But you'll panic less often if you'll give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Number two, assume the best, not the worst. Whatever situation you're dealing with, don't automatically assume this is probably going to turn out the worst way it possibly can. No, assume it might turn out the best way it possibly can. Any of you mothers ever read, what's that little character, Winnie the Pooh? You ever read Winnie the Pooh to your children? You remember Eeyore? Eeyore, everything's bad, everything's going to get worse. And, you know, don't be Eeyore. Assume the best, not the worst. Number three. I love this one. Remember, you only heard one side of the story. Whatever you're dealing with right now, as soon as you first hear it, don't panic. Don't get frustrated because you've only heard one side. You know, I know sometimes you think, oh, but Brother Young, there can't be another side to this story. It is so clear cut. Wait till you hear the other side of the story and then you'll think, oh my goodness, there is another side of the story. Number four, even if you saw it with your own eyes. Because I know sometimes we think, hey, I don't have to hear the other side of the story. I was there. I saw it happen. But even if you saw it with your own eyes, remember, you only saw it from one viewpoint. You only saw it from your viewpoint. If you go to the busy intersection here in town somewhere tonight where they had a wreck, and you interview four witnesses on the four different corners of the intersection, you'll get four different stories. Because they all saw it from their viewpoint. So remember, if you saw it with your own eyes, you only saw it from one viewpoint. Number five, this may be the most important one. Don't take it personal. Don't take it personal. You know, very few of us have time to get up early in the morning, get dressed, get in our car before you leave home, figure out where you're going, get there first, wait for you to come by, and bump into you on purpose. I'm sorry, we just don't have time to do that. You know, you wouldn't worry so often about what people think about you if you realized how seldom they do. Don't take it personal. Well, I know exactly why she said that. No, you don't. Well, I know he was just out to get me. No, you don't know that. Don't take it personal. Number six. Even when occasionally the other person is, this time, having a bad moment. Okay, this is that one time when the other person involved really is having a bad moment. Even when the other person is having a bad moment, it's your job to absorb his bad moment. You know, that's what we're in life for. That's why we're here, because someday you're going to need somebody to absorb your bad moment. And so now this time it's your turn to absorb his bad moment. Boy, I remember one time right after I went on staff at the church, First Baptist Church. I've been on staff there now for right at 35 years. And when I first went on staff, been on staff maybe 2 years at the time, Brother Hiles assigned me a certain project one time, and me and another staff member were supposed to work on this project together and get it done. Well, I got my part of the project done, but the other fellow didn't do his part, I thought. Well, I didn't think, I knew. Oh, I had the facts clear. I mean, it was clear. There was no other side of the story. It was a clear-cut facts that I had done my part. He had not done his part. So we couldn't finish the project until he did his part. And I knew exactly what I was supposed to do. I was simply supposed to go tell Brother Hiles the whole story, explain to him all the facts and details about the fact that I had done my part and the other fellow hadn't done his part. And I knew what Brother Hiles would do. He'd straighten that other fellow out. So I went into his office and I laid out all the facts and figures and proof and clear-cut evidence that I had done my part and the other fellow hadn't. And Brother Hiles said, "Ray, if either one of the two of you would choose to be a good Christian, I wouldn't have to referee right now." So I stood up straight and tall and straightened my shoulders up. And walked out from underneath his door to leave his office. And understood it was my turn to absorb that guy's bad moment. And by the way, if the other person knows you're absorbing their bad moment, you're not. You know this attitude, "Well, okay, I'll be a good Christian since you're a jerk." Uh-oh. I hit the nerve, didn't I? When you're like that, you're not absorbing their bad moment. When the other person doesn't realize you absorb their bad moment until sometime later, that's when you're absorbing their bad moment. Then number 7, love and help any needy person, regardless of where they fit in. If they're the one with no stuff, if they're the one with some stuff and doing nothing with it, if they're the one who has some stuff and they're always bumping into somebody else, if they're the one who gets upset when somebody bumps into them, or if they're one of the wise ones who is pointed to help others, or even the one to whom we take all the hard cases, everybody needs some help sometimes. There's some time when everybody needs some help. And you'll panic less often and get frustrated less often if you'll just simply say, "It doesn't matter where they fit in. If they need my help, I'm going to try to help." For several years, our pastor, Dr. Jack Hiles, had a radio broadcast. It was a 30-minute program, and he broadcast live each morning that he was in town from his study there at the church. So it was called the Pastor's Study. And he always ended the program every day with the exact same word. It was a real casual program. He didn't teach the Bible. He didn't preach. He just drank some hot tea and talked about where he'd been lately and had prayer for folks and just real folksy chit-chat kind of a little broadcast. And he always ended the broadcast with these words: "Remember, be good to everybody, because everybody's having a tough time. And goodbye from the Pastor's Study." Remember, be good to everybody, because everybody's having a tough time. Everybody. The person on your right, the person on your left, the person in front of you, the person behind you. Everybody's having a tough time. Let's be good to everybody. I'd like to have every head bowed and every eye closed. I wonder who would say tonight, "Brother Young, somewhere along the line, those 6 different type people you described, you described me." Or, "Brother Young, in those 7 things you told us we could do to be frustrated and panic less often. You described an area that I need to, where I need to improve some. And Brother Young, I don't want to waste my time or God's time or your time. I want to make some improvements tonight based on truth that I've heard from the Word of God. So, Brother Young, would you pray for me that I could make some decisions tonight about some things in my life that I'm going to change so that I can be that much more help to somebody who has a need? Would you slip your hand up right now and let me pray with you about that? Keep it up for a moment. Thank you. You may put it down. Now, those that raised your hand, you're saying not just, okay, I'm going to be a better Christian, but I mean there's something specific where I know God wants me to improve in an area, make some adjustments in my life. And maybe there's some others who say, well, I didn't raise my hand that first time, but I probably should have. Would you include me in that prayer, Brother Young? Would you slip your hand up right now and let me pray with you also? Anybody else right now? God bless you. I see that hand over here on my left. Anybody else? You say, I didn't raise my hand the first time, but I probably should have. Include me in that prayer. Would you slip your hand up real quick and let me pray with you also? Thank you. I see that hand back here in the back on my right. Anybody else? Father, I pray for these that have raised their hands tonight and maybe others that possibly should have. I pray that decisions will be made here tonight in this service at this altar that will change the atmosphere of somebody's home, will change the atmosphere of somebody's workplace, will change the atmosphere of somebody's relationship, maybe here at the church or on the job or in their neighborhood or whatever the case. And I pray that all of us will step up and do more of our part to help those who have a need. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you would, please, to keep your head bowed and your eyes closed. But I'm asking if you would stand right now. Would everyone please stand? Whether you raise your hand or not, if you'd go ahead and stand for me, please. And in just a moment, the pianist is going to begin to play. And when I point to her, she's going to play. And when she hits that very first note, don't wait. You step out from where you are. You make your way to the front and you kneel here. And you talk to God about what it is that you feel like God would want you to do tonight. You raise your hand, or maybe you should have, and I prayed for you. You come right.